with that.
All right, the Health and Human Services Finance Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Pearson moves approval of the minutes from February 23rd, 2017. Do we have any corrections to those minutes? Seeing no corrections, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes from February 23rd, 2017, please say aye.
Aye.
No, the minutes are approved from February 23rd. Today we have up House File 714, Representative Miller. Representative Miller, welcome to the committee. Please, I will move your bill, the House File 714, be laid over with possible inclusion, the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Miller, like all committees today, we do have a packed agenda, and we would appreciate moving as fast as possible to your bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members, thank you. I will be very brief. You've made it abundantly clear you don't like listening to me talk anyway. So I will pass it on to my first testifier. The thing that I will say is that the bad news is that Minnesota has a human trafficking, sex trafficking problem. The good news is that we are a national leader in addressing the problem, with a large part thanks to the people who you are going to be hearing today. So with my first testifier is Mr. Jeff Bauer.
We always like to see you here, Representative Miller. You know that. Welcome back, Mr. Bauer. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Jeff Bauer. I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs at the Family Partnership. Thanks for having me back today. I want to start always by thanking Representative Miller. As you know, he's a passionate guy, and he's been a passionate advocate for these bills. So we appreciate you so much. Mr. Chair and members, your support over a lot of years now is greatly appreciated. And as you know, I always like to thank Ms. Iverson, because we all know that this committee doesn't run without her, so thank you for your help.
Amen.
And also Ms. Clarkvist for the expert bill drafting assistance along the way. We appreciate you too. So really quickly, because I know a lot of you have heard this a number of times now, we've been on quite the journey since 2011 when Minnesota passed our Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth bill. It's been a lot of building over a lot of years. So let me really quickly tell you once again. When we started this work in 2011, we had trafficked youth who were ending up in the juvenile justice system instead of getting connected to the support and services they need. That has changed now. When we started, we had 2 shelter beds in the entire state of Minnesota, and now we have over 40. We had almost no services around the state of Minnesota, and now we have services in a lot of places in Minnesota. And last but certainly not least, we had almost no law enforcement trained to identify victims or to investigate these cases. Looking at Representative Pinto, who had a lot to do with this next piece, now we have over 2,000 law enforcement professionals trained around the state. So tip of the hat, Rep. Pinto, for your work on that. So that was a mouthful. So where we sit today, we are currently at $11 million in state investment in our safe harbor system. Up from zero when we started coming here for funding in 2013. That's a lot of progress in a short amount of time. That's due to your leadership. So we are here today to get the rest of the way in phase one. We've been putting the number out there in front of you for many years now, $13.3 million. The bill in front of you, House File 714, represents the remaining investment to get to that number. So very quickly, Mr. Chair and members, in the bill is $1 million additional dollars for housing and shelter around the state of Minnesota, and particularly in greater Minnesota. There are still gaps where the shelter beds are not immediately available to these youth. We want to keep building that. There's $200,000 for additional youth outreach workers. As you all know, youth who are being sexually exploited and trafficked rarely self-identify, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And so people who are trained to connect to them, to do outreach to them, are very critical to connecting them to services. There are $750,000 additional for comprehensive service grants. That's to get supports in workplaces in the state. And then finally, we have $200,000 for training and technical assistance. What we found, particularly in greater Minnesota, is that some of these programs need some additional support to put all the pieces together. This is cross-jurisdictional work, and so we need support for that. And then finally, evaluation, so we can tell you that what we're doing works. So, Mr. Chair and members, that is what's in the bill. I'm ready to stand for any questions, but we also have some amazing testifiers with whom you're familiar from the link.
All right, Mr. Bauer, Representative Murphy has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Bauer, for being here, and thank you, Representative Miller, again, for carrying this legislation. We are in the start now of setting the state's budget, and the committee is going to hear a lot of requests for funding. And we're going to have to make the choices that we have to make as we get closer to the end of session. So can you share with us, from your perspective, what it means for Minnesota and for people that are being trafficked if we're not able to fund this proposal?
Mr. Bauer.
You're telling us about the good that will happen if we do it. Can you help us understand what the consequence is if we don't?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I tend to be a strengths-based person, as I know you are as well. But I will tell you, and you'll hear from the link in just a minute, there are waiting lists already right now. And what that means is one of our friends in law enforcement or somewhere else identifies a trafficking victim, and the first thing they want to do is get that trafficking victim to somewhere where he or she is safe from their trafficker and that has the therapeutic support that that person needs right away. So what it means when we don't continue to fund this is that there isn't anywhere for that person to go. Ms. Holger Ambrose will tell you, then they start calling around to see if there's anywhere that can take this child. And sometimes the outcome isn't good. They do what they can and they triage it. But not continuing to invest means that child doesn't get the help he or she needs. And I will say, in addition, the more law enforcement we've trained around the state on this issue, the more victims that they are identifying as we sit here every day. And so the number is even exceeding what we initially thought when we started building this, and so we've got to keep going. It means that there will be kids who can't get connected to help.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Let's move to testifiers. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed in any order that you'd like.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Beth Holger Ambrose. I'm the executive director for an organization called The Link. We are a nonprofit based in North Minneapolis providing services throughout the Twin Cities metro area for young people who have been sex trafficked, for youth who are involved in the juvenile justice system, and young people and young families who are experiencing homelessness. We truly, first of all, want to foremost thank all of you for your dedication over the years to this issue, as well as to young people experiencing homelessness. And I especially want to thank Representative Miller, Representative Pinto, and Jeff Bauer for continuing to bring this forward. We really appreciate it. Prior to Safe Harbor being passed and having No Wrong Door, I, along with many colleagues, were working with young people who had been victimized by sex trafficking, getting raped, sexually assaulted in hotel rooms, in private parties, and all over the place. And what was happening to them at that time, prior to this law passing, was that if they were found, they could be arrested, charged, and placed in a juvenile detention facility. And honestly, some of the youth on my prior caseload would get returned right back to their pimp, who would pick them up from the JDC, saying they were so-and-so's uncle, or whatever they needed to do. It was a very vicious cycle, and I'm really proud of our state that we've passed Safe Harbor and No Wrong Door with all of your support. So now young people who have been sex trafficked are seen as the amazing young people they are, but also who have been through a lot of trauma and need our support as a state. And so as a result, The Link is one part of the No Wrong Door response, and our part is to provide an emergency shelter and housing program called Passageways, which actually my colleague here, Fawn, named. And what it is it provides 6 shelter beds and 5 one-bedroom apartments for youth between the ages of 12 and 24 who have been sex trafficked. Boys, girls, any gender identity, transgender, and anyone else in between. And we, in 2016, served 67 individual youth just under the age of 18. That doesn't include the 18 to 24-year-olds. And those young people kept our shelter full every day. We had a waiting list for the shelter side between 4 and 7 on any given day, and on the housing side between 8 and 12 on any given day. And it's not fun for me as an executive director to get a phone call from somebody from Homeland Security or FBI and having to tell them we don't have a bed open and having to explain that. And so we really do need to build our capacity, you know, throughout the state. And just one last thing before I give the testimony to my two esteemed colleagues here is that I really want to let you know this is making a difference. Earlier this month, we had a young person come to our emergency shelter at Passageways straight from the hospital. She had been hospitalized for 2 weeks because her trafficker beat her up so badly that she had to have her jaw rewired. Mm-hmm. And she's 13. She's from Minnesota. And so those are the kinds of things that our staff are working with every day at the link, as well as our partner organizations from the other Safe Harbor grantees like House in Duluth, Heartland Girls Ranch out in Benson. And so we just want to say that these programs literally help save young people's lives. They also help a lot with law enforcement investigations, because once a young person has a safe place to live and heal, they're much more likely to want to cooperate with a law enforcement investigation. We don't force them to, but we give them that option. And we've had a lot of success and actually have helped a lot of traffickers get prosecuted. One actually was also accused of a homicide in St. Cloud. So we're making a big difference. And I also just want to say that it's a really good investment as well. So there was a study done by some great researchers at the University of Minnesota, URAC, with funding from the Women's Foundation, that found that for every public dollar from our state that's invested, it saves $34. And that's just for the housing end of Safe Harbor. So we really, truly appreciate all of your investment in this. And with that, if it's okay, I'd like to turn it over to Simi and Fran with your permission.
Thank you. Thank you. Please introduce yourself and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Simeona Williams, and thanks to the committee for having me here. I'm a survivor on the Survivor Advisory Committee working at the link. The last time I was here, I don't know if some of you guys remember me, but I shed tears. But, I was sitting there thinking to myself, I said, well, those tears were different. They were not the same kind of tears that I've cried before, because I know that I'm helping people. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, God, no. Mm-hmm.
It's gotten here. Okay, anyway.
Doing good.
Oh, no. Okay. Got to stop. Okay. I know that I'm helping, and I know that I have to be that person there, or somebody has to be there. If it's not going to be me, then I'm going to have to, I don't know, it's going to have to be me. Somebody's going to have to help them. If my voice isn't strong enough, then I'm going to have to hear more of their stories, but to become stronger so that I can give you guys at least a feel of how they feel every day waking up, knowing that they have to go through these kind of things. So with a place like Passageways, a place like, with having these services, it's just like, why not fund them? Especially when this is just like a cycle. They're living in poverty. They're living in all kinds of things. They're debarred from a lot of things. Why not help them? Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Williams.
Sorry. My name is Fawn Lemieux. Thank you for having me here. I would just say that having these services means a lot. It changes a lot of lives. And, you know, if they had these services when we were younger, you know, maybe we wouldn't have had to go through what we went through. But now that we're helping other people, you know, it feels good. And I just want to continue to help people, other youth that have been through what I've been through. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Lemieux. Representative Halverson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Williams, Ms. Lemieux. Thanks for crying, because I'm crying with you. You guys come here so often and share the most intimate parts of your lives and the most horrible parts of your lives so that we can try to make the world better for others. And I'm sorry that you've been put in that position to do that, but thank you for being advocates and thank you for helping us understand. And you're not alone, so I'm kind of with you. That's not what I actually raised my hand to say, but you got me there. Actually, my question was much more technical. and my question was, how can you, perhaps Ms. Holder-Ambrose can describe the importance of these funds and expanding this program now with the Super Bowl coming to Minnesota? I think that we're hearing more and more about the way these big athletic events impact trafficking in our communities, and can you describe maybe the need with that coming forward next year?
Sure. So what I can say is there's definitely, like I said, a huge need for these services. And I think anytime, I'm not a Super Bowl expert per se, but what I would say is anytime you have an increase or influx of population, all kinds of crimes can tend to increase just because of the simple fact that you have more people. And so there is the chance that there could be more sexual exploitation going on as a result of more people coming into town. And so there has been a great effort being coordinated with the, there's a subcommittee being led actually by Hennepin County and the Women's Foundation that we're a part of to work on increasing our efforts during that time. Of course, the big question always for that is resources as well. So we're hoping that regardless of what events are in town, we need to address this issue for sure. But we're hoping that we can utilize the Super Bowl coming to town to raise awareness and light to this issue. So that people understand that it's happening, even as someone has recently said in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, I mean, this is still happening. And so we want to make sure, I think that was your phrase, but we want to make sure that it's highlighted and people know about it because it's very underground. If you don't see it, or if you're not involved in the life or around young people that are, then it's easy to not see it. And so we want to bring light to that through events like the Super Bowl. Thank you so much for everything you do, too. You do so much. So we really appreciate you.
Thank you, Ms. Ambrose. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think folks are aware I've dedicated a lot of my professional life to this issue and have been the Director of Training and Protocol Development for the Safe Harbor System the last couple of years. So I had the chance to present with these three testifiers, and you can imagine they really present pretty powerfully to law enforcement audiences, many others, so thank you very much for your work and Representative Miller for putting this bill forward. I wanted to ask, bring up kind of a broader point, building on the point that Representative Murphy made about the consequence of not funding this, because when Ms. Lemieux made the point about services, you mentioned that, and there being services and support, it's vulnerability of kids that is part of the element that fuels this. Of course, there's all kinds of other things that we're working on, but I guess I just want to make the point that some of the other areas that this committee funds and some of the other needs that we will be considering have a direct connection to this in terms of providing support for families and for people who may be targeted. While we're doing a lot of work on the law enforcement side to go after the mostly men who are perpetrating, the fact is there's a lot of support that can be provided more broadly than this. And so I guess I just, not to bring us too much out of this, but I wonder if our testifiers, Mr. Bauer, can comment about that, about kind of the prevention side of things. And the kind of support that could be provided more broadly to families and to people who may be targeted.
Ms. Ambrose, Ms. Bauer.
We rock pictures.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto. You're always a big thinker, and that's a really big question. I think where we have been, and you might have heard me say this in this committee before, is, you know, In a public health crisis, right, when there's something really going down and it's spreading statewide, the first thing you need to do is address that directly. And everything that we've built so far through this committee, through this legislature, you know, across the state, has really been an intervention. It's an intervention to stop the spread of an epidemic. What we have not yet done is talked about prevention. And what we have not yet done is talked about demand. You've heard me say this before in this committee, men in the room, a lot of that's on us. That's about how we're raising our boys. That's about how we ourselves are in the world. It's about a lot of that. And so it's difficult sitting in committee because some of that is legislation, right? Some of that is money for prevention, and we need to do a lot of that. And I think some of that is cultural shift. It's about how we are in the world. And I think we need to find the balance moving forward. And I know you well enough to know the look on your face that there's a follow-up question, but that would be my initial response, and I would turn it over to these experts to tell you what they think about it.
Ms. Andrew.
Okay. I would just, I agree with, of course, everything that was said by Mr. Bauer, but I would also add that I want to thank all of you and Representative Fisher and Halverson for this one, too, that the youth that we see most oftentimes getting targeted for sex trafficking are young people who are runaways, homeless, or involved in the foster care system. And the fact that there's been support for the Homeless Youth Act will help a lot of prevention, because if those youth don't have to be on the streets and they're getting help and support, then they'll be much less likely to be trafficked. So I'd just like to thank you for your continued and hopefully ongoing support in future years of that. The more we support all of the young people in our state to have equitable access to housing and supportive services, then the less likely traffickers are to get to them.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm thinking of a, there was a, well, she was 16, I suppose, when an investigator and I were talking with her and asked what would have made a difference for you in not experiencing this, and she said food. She said, I was hungry. Mm-hmm. And that's true for many, many of the young people involved in this. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your support of this issue, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on kind of the broader, the bigger picture, I suppose, even in some of the other areas we look at as well. I'm so supportive of this and want to make sure we're that we're addressing this issue in those other means as well, the other areas the committee is addressing. Thank you.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick questions. First of all, thank you to our testifiers. Very, very well said what was brought up. First question I have is when you're mentioning about the homeless youth, Ms. Holger Embles, usually what is the standard time from a youth being homeless on the street to the first opportunity where somebody's going to try to traffic them? How long is that period, or how short is that period?
Ms. Ambrose.
Okay, sure. So different studies say different things, of course. But what I would say is that the one that does, first of all, just to take one step back, there are about different academic studies have shown that one out of every four youth experiencing homelessness are recruited into sexual exploitation or trafficking. So that's one statistic for you. And then there is a statistic out there that's saying if a young person has experienced homelessness for 30 days or longer, that they are most likely during that time of experiencing homelessness approached by or recruited by a trafficker. And ironically, I have been approached by someone I've done street outreach, so I definitely consider that's true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And another thing I want to kind of do a follow-up on is I know that a lot of times when people hear state dollars going through, some people just assume that it's just state dollars funding this. I know that from the work that the Link has done in the past, there's been a lot of times where they are leveraging other dollars. In other words, the state doesn't provide 100% of dollars. Can you just kind of give us an idea what percentage the state is actually covering versus other funders that are also coming to the table?
Ms. Sam.
What I will tell you is that we're so fortunate to receive Safe Harbor funding. It does fund just a little bit over like 52% of our operating costs for passageways. So we work very hard to raise the rest of the funding. So we have fundraising events. We have faith-based community partners and churches that donate to us, individuals. We also are constantly looking for private foundation and corporate grants. So like all of our nonprofit partners, we're kind of in the same place where we're trying to pool everything together. But it's a really good point that not all of the funds come through Safe Harbor. And then I also should mention we get funding through Hennepin County, Ramsey County, and Scott County as well. So we have leveraged as much as we possibly can. And so, but we really appreciate the Safe Harbor funds, because without it, we would not have been able to open passageways. But we're really, I just have to say my one plug is we really are hoping that you'll consider the expanded funding, because frankly, we really need to have more services like passageways and our partner organizations are providing across the state, so that we don't have to turn so many youth away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank Representative Miller also for bringing this bill forward and say hey to Coach. I don't know if she remembers me, but I actually worked with you in Bloomington coaching track. The years have been better to you than they have to me.
Especially the bear.
This problem is everywhere. I represent the Shakopee area, which is an affluent good area, and my wife is involved at the high school, and the problem with homeless children down there, and what makes it difficult is a lot of them work so hard to not look homeless. Okay. And so you have to have the antennas up to notice them, And like my Irish mother said, you got to be willing to stick your big fat nose in their business and find out what's going on to help them. And there's houses of faith down in the Shakopee area that are stepping up, and we've got some nonprofits, the CAP agency, things like that, that everyone's coordinating with. And this is an incredibly important topic, and you people aren't alone. We're aware, and more people are aware of it. And there's people out there that, as they learn of this, eagerly are willing to help. But it isn't just in this building. There's all kinds of people outside this building, too, that no one's going to call this right. And this problem exists anywhere where there's a water tower. That's about all it takes. I mean, it's not a big city problem or anything. And so people listening, it's in the little town just as much as it's in the big towns.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Nothing more. I think everything's been said. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me this opportunity to present this bill.
All right. With that, oh, I'm sorry. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Forgot to ask. All right. Seeing none, House File 714 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And thanks to the testifiers, particularly for Ms. Lemieux and Ms. Williams. We really do appreciate it. You did a great job with your testimony, and I know it's not easy sometimes, but you both did an excellent job, and it makes a big difference. So thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Miller, I will go ahead and move House File 713 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. We have the bill before us. Understand that there's an A1 author's amendment. I'm going to go ahead and move the A1 amendment. Representative Miller, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, to the amendment, when this bill was originally drawn up, the intention, what the original House File 713, there was an intention for this to be a competitive grant process so that outside groups could do this. We'll kind of address that a little bit more when we get into this, so I can answer questions on it now. But it was accidentally left off. We identified it going into public safety, but we thought that since this is Department of Health that we're addressing, we should hold the amendment until this committee. So this is just a technical correction to our bill.
All right, and Representative Miller, this isn't going from a grant specified grant to a competitive grant. This is just a technical clarification. Is that correct?
That's correct. This is just
all right. Any other questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing no other questions, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, those opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Miller, to your bill as amended.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. You've just heard great testimony on the great work we're doing with Safe Harbor. No wrong door. I always start that wrong. I apologize. I've got to practice a little bit more. And that really deals with children 18 and under. Well, as is very obvious, we also have a problem with trafficked adults. That is a little bit more problematic in trying to determine how we can legislate that and how we can address that for many reasons. So over this past year, myself, Mr. Bauer, many other people have discussed, and we recognize the fact that the reason why the Safe Harbor bill was so successful is that we got a group of stakeholders together to write something that was comprehensive across the political spectrum, across the interests of law enforcement and human services. Everyone got to the table and said, what would make good legislation? Because we saw that model is working well for the first one, we believe that that's what we want to do, and that's what this bill addresses. So I do have some testifiers that I think will explain what it is we're trying to do a little bit more. So if you're ready, we'll move on to our testifiers.
All right. Ms. Kendall from Stearns County, and we have the Chief from Ventrude, or Chief Ventrude from Wake Park. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. Go whatever order you would prefer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much. Dave Ventrude, I'm Police Chief for the City of Wake Park. If you're not familiar with the St. Cloud metro area, where Wake Park is immediately adjacent to St. Cloud on the western border. And I'll try to keep it brief. I just want to give you, though, a little bit of context of some of the things that we are dealing with and have been dealing with. I totally agree with the representative's position that This is not just a big city issue. This is happening in greater Minnesota as well. About 5 years ago, we had a motel in our city that was kind of an epicenter for a lot of the trafficking activity. And I got a call from the state trafficking task force that they were looking for a 14-year-old girl who was out of the metro, who was being trafficked in the St. Cloud area. And lo and behold, it turned out that she was in my city. And I have to say that I took that personal. It was like, I've been a DARE officer, I've got kids of my own, I'm like, not in my city, not now, not ever. And so that was not followed too much longer. We had a gang shooting, same location, a lot of narcotics were confiscated, and lo and behold, there was a 16-year-old from northern Minnesota being trafficked out of one of the motel rooms. Needless to say, those two events got our attention. So we went about trying to discern the scope of the problem in central Minnesota. In the last 5 years, and I've been a law enforcement officer in central Minnesota for about 25 years. Most of my career was St. Cloud PD, and now 8 years as chief in Wade Park. And I suspect trafficking, prostitution was occurring when I was a rookie. But something's happened in the last 5 years. This has become a significant issue, not only for central Minnesota, but all of Minnesota. It's happening a lot of places. We have identified well over 150 women, mostly women, who have been trafficked in central Minnesota. We have arrested well over 100 individuals for soliciting sex, several of them soliciting sex with minor, for minor children. When I started reading some of the first complaints for some of the arrests that we made, I could tell real early on that this was not these guys' first rodeo. They had been down this road before. They weren't calling saying, how does this work? You know, they knew the lingo. They knew how to do the talk. It was scary. And so again, we've made several arrests, working rather informally through mutual aid with neighboring law enforcement agencies. We've made 7 or 8 arrests of traffickers, several of which have been sentenced to prison for a very long time. And so the issue is real. And my hope is that if we can get funding for this program to allow us to move forward, my hope is that we can be a model for the rest of the state, create something that can be replicated in other areas to combat this serious issue. We are looking at a multi-jurisdictional, a multidisciplinary approach to deal with this issue. We're trying to address things not only on the supply side, but also on the demand side, if I can use those terms. And I have to say, I'd really appreciate your support for what we're trying to do in central Minnesota.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Janelle Kendall. I'm the Stearns County attorney. I'm his prosecutor. As I said, we've got 8 pimps so far in St. Cloud, people in St. Cloud. And Representative Pinto's boss, John Choi, told me that we have the largest demand outside the metro. I had no idea. As Chief Bentrud said, when we start looking in our files at the runaway, at the child protection files, these kids are all over the place. But these adults are all over the place. And that's my understanding is what we're talking about, having a statewide conversation from a policy perspective. What should we do with the persons who are already 18 or 35 or 50 who have been in the life for a very long time? And what are we going to do about that? So we would very much appreciate from a prosecution perspective as well, having that conversation candidly about what we can do. We have a task force put together in St. Cloud right now where our sexual assault advocates are a critical part of our team. I have advocates going out with law enforcement to these calls so that when we're running into people who are in the life, they're not just getting met with a badge and a gun and a uniform, but we have an advocate there with whom they can have a confidential conversation and talk about what's really going on here. So as a prosecutor, everybody's for getting pimps. I understand that. We've had a very good experience down here with the legislature. But when we talk about the demand side and we talk about what's going on with the human beings that are ending up in these hotel rooms, and now we've chased them out of there into private residences, apartments, buses, all over the place, we're all over this, and we really appreciate that you are too, and would very much appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation about where we should go next. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kendall. Mr. Bauer? Nada. All right. Member questions? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I just want to commend Wade Park and Stearns County, our real leaders on this issue and going after, as the county attorney said, the traffickers, but then also buyers and really working in a great way with victim survivors. So I just want to commend them publicly and thank them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, the determination that I hear in both of your voices is really heartening to me, and it tells me that these resources will be put to very good use because your dedication to solving this issue is clear. So thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank members of my community in Duluth, Gail Schoenfelder, and the rest of the sex trafficking advocates there for all of their work that they've done. And thank you for coming to the Capitol to testify today.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, thanks, Tim, and thanks to the testifiers. And I did jail ministry for 13 years, and I got some of the same types of responses in there. Do you believe, and the question is to the testifier from the police department, do you believe the consequences for trafficking young people and children are strong enough to deter people from entering into this for the financial gain or whatever satisfaction they're getting out of it?
Chief Bentry.
Boy, I'm not sure if I can. I don't know if I'm the best person to answer the question. I have to say that I have been a little surprised at the sentences that were given out in our local cases, and rightfully so. I mean, strong for those that they've been sent. Now, there were some individuals that had been frequent flyers for us, had a long criminal history, and so I'm sure they had points for other past crimes. But I feel good about the sentences that some of these guys got because of what they were doing. I would say about 80% of the women that we have had contact with are being trafficked by somebody, and we have a percent that I would say more freelancing. But it's I don't know, Janelle, maybe you want to respond to that better. I think it's been good.
Ms. Kendall,
as you said, this ain't their first rodeo. The people who are doing the buying, they don't think they're going to get caught. They have so clearly been doing this for such a long time. We've got two or three guys we've caught. I mean, these guys' pictures have been in the St. Cloud Times. They're in the paper. Everybody knows who they are. And we're catching them a second and a third time.
Why are they getting out
again? They're dumb. I mean, they're...
they're dumb.
Candidate.
Is that men in general or just dumb?
Well, neither. Sex sells. Sex sells, people. And people buy it.
Yeah.
It's unlike anything I've ever seen. And the community response to putting their pictures in the paper, I was afraid we were going to have collateral damage from suicide of the 14-year-old girl in Albany who opens up the paper. And now all of her classmates and her grandma and her neighbor and his employer, people have lost their jobs over this. It's like drugs, only worse. And what we're getting are drug dealers who are selling women and drugs the same day, because they sell the drugs once and they sell her 15 times. So what we're seeing is very real, and the sentences that we're getting on the buyers are pretty good. It's the part that Jeff talks about that this has become socially acceptable behavior, and if it's gone like this in St. Cloud and Painesville and Coldsboro and Wake Park and Akeley and Princeburg, it's bigger than the sentence. The sentence is not necessarily going to deter them, but we get plenty of good sentences when we try real hard.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to tag on Representative Grunhagen that the trafficking sentences, I mean, I was co-counsel on the cases with the highest sentences, 36 and 40 years. I mean, people are going away for a long time, these traffickers are. Just in public safety this morning, there was talk about how deterrence is less based on the size of the penalty, but as the county attorney said, the likelihood of being caught. And so as we are able to provide resources to victim survivors, as in the last bill, to be cooperating and to kind of support in this bill as well, that allows law enforcement even more to focus on traffickers and focus on buyers, which, of course, the penalty is way less for being a buyer, and that's been increasing as well. we're able to increase the certainty and make it be much more likely they're going to be caught. Because historically, we just haven't been focusing on this issue, regardless of whatever the penalties have been. Thank you.
Ms. Kendall, how long have you been a prosecutor?
1990.
27 years. And during that time, obviously there's a difference in focus over prosecution of trafficking crimes and sex crimes over that time period. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a change in the kinds of people that you prosecute? And to what do you attribute, if there is a change, to what do you attribute the change over time?
The trafficking, we've really just started since 2014. That drive-by that Dave talked about was the first big one that we had. But we are seeing, in terms of the buyers, white, middle-class, married, employed men with children almost across the board. It will pretty much fit the demographic of your community, and I think that's what other prosecutors, to the extent that they've been able to, are seeing. In terms of the pimps, these are career criminals. That's who we usually deal with on the big sentences. You set up the Minnesota sentencing guidelines that if you've got a criminal history and you do something bad, you get hit pretty hard, and if you don't, you don't. It's not mystical, magical stuff. But I think we're seeing that's why this is so, it's just so socially acceptable. It's like nobody said there was anything wrong with it until recently. And we're seeing the same thing. I go back a lot farther in domestic violence prosecutions. I don't know that there's more domestic violence. I think people are just willing to report it. Mm-hmm. We're more likely to catch them, and we're more likely to convict them. So I don't know that the amount of crime going on out there is any different. We're just getting, as Representative Pinto said, now we're opening up our eyes to what's been there all along and being able to do something about it thanks to what you've done down here in St. Paul.
Thank you. Other member questions? Seeing none, Representative Miller, final thoughts?
Final thoughts, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is real important work that we're doing here. I think that's been shown here today and shown in the other committees. I ask for your support. I believe this is going to be held over for potential inclusion, so I hope that it's included.
All right. Thank you, Representative Miller and the testifiers. House File 713, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, next up we have House File 106, Representative Zerwas. Representative Zerwas moves House File 106 be re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you very much.
We have the bill before us. Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair, members. House File 106 is the community EMT payment technical fix. This legislative proposal before you would clarify legislation passed last session in regards to community EMT services and payments. This adds the word post-discharge to the statute to assure that services rendered and paid for are only for discharge services. This technical fix, the request from DHS in discussions on implementation of last year's bill. With me today to answer any questions is Buck McFalpin from the Minnesota Ambulance Association.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chairman, Buck McAlpin, Minnesota Ambulance Association. I think Representative Zerwas hit it on the head. It was really a one-word technical fix and some cleanup language under the word medical response to mirror where this sits in our EMS statutes. And I see the fiscal note was zero on it from DHS, finally, that we received, and would stand for any questions.
Any questions for Mr. McAlpin or Representative Zerwas? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Zerwas, when I look at the bill language, I see that under current law, it refers to when ordered by a treating physician. And I just had a visit recently from some physician assistants, and I know that you had some interest in other practitioners. I think you carried a bill for expanding scope for either nurse practitioners or somebody in that group, APRNs, all of whom are now prescribers. And I'm just wondering if it's just an oversight that this is only referring to physicians and not to all practitioners who can order this, or if that's intentional.
For Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, I guess I hadn't noticed that. I don't know if...
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. McDowell.
Yep, Representative Levin. In our community paramedic language, our bigger program, we do have physician assistants, nurse practitioners, but in negotiations with the nurses and the home care folks and providers, there's some exemptions out of the home care statute to be sure that these folks weren't certified as home care providers. And in the pilot models that were done in the West Metro, folks are pretty adamant that it was a physician to start that was doing the care plans on these populations. One, they have to opt into the program also, and it was more of the physician relationship that finalized their discharge orders.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Seeing no other questions, does anyone in the audience want to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Zerwas, final thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you to DHS for their cooperation and help in the technical fix, and I look forward to getting this adopted.
All right. Representative Zerwas renews his motion that House File 106 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. House File 106 is re-referred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Next up, we have House File 1564, Representative Franson. Representative Franson moves House File 1564 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. We have the bill before us, and we have the bill's author, Representative Franson.
Amazing how that works, Mr. Chair. All right, so, friends, nearly a quarter of babies born in Minnesota each year are at high risk of not receiving the support they need for healthy development. Among those highest at risk are babies born to teen parents who are at greater risk for premature birth, low birth weight, and developmental delays, while their parents are less likely to graduate high school and more likely to live in poverty. For many children born to teen parents, the achievement gap starts at birth. This is a critical time to intervene to ensure these babies have the opportunity to be healthy and successful in life. Decades of research demonstrates evidence-based home visiting services change the trajectory of babies' lives, but we can only reach 3,800 families per year with existing funds. So there's a solution, and House File 1564 is that solution. House File 1564 funds an expansion of home visiting services to pregnant and parenting teens under the age of 20 in Minnesota. This voluntary service links pregnant women and child caregivers with trained professionals who are who is convenient and a single point of support for teaching new parents how to provide a safe and nurturing environment for babies at each stage of early development, screening for maternal depression and domestic violence, screening and monitoring babies' development, and providing referrals to programs offering economic, housing, and other assistance. Steady support to mothers raising children in the hardest of circumstances. Depending on the needs of the teen families, each family will receive at least 4 visits, up to 2 to 3 years of routine visits from specially trained nurse or public health professional. And once fully phased in, this proposal will serve more than 3,600 additional families each year through the home visiting programs at local and tribal public health agencies. So what are the impacts for Minnesotans, you're asking? Well, children born in the highest risk circumstances will be healthier and more ready for school. There will be a 50% decrease in the children's language delays and a 67% decrease in behavioral and intellectual problems. Their parents will have fewer unplanned pregnancies and spend 20% less time on public assistance, and the mothers 82% increase in time employed. That is House File 1564, and I believe we have some help up here.
All right.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Adamson?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Karen Adamson, and I am the manager of the Maternal Child Health and Early Childhood Services at Hennepin County. I'm also here representing the Minnesota Coalition of Targeted Home Visiting as an executive committee member. Hennepin County supports targeted home visiting to high-risk families as an integral part of our legislative platform. We believe that home visiting as a strategy can improve brain development of infants, improve school readiness, and help parents learn to be successful in parenting and in life. We have served hundreds of high-risk families over the years in Hennepin County, and a high percentage of them started with a teen mother. The message is clear that for the best outcomes, we must begin to help families at high risk, starting prenatally and at birth. Early targeted home visiting has been shown to be an effective strategy in helping to break generational cycles of poverty, trauma, and abuse, and support for healthy and successful families. Home visiting programs can change the outcomes for young and inexperienced parents. One example is our targeted home visiting program, Teen Hope. Teen Hope is a home visiting program provided to all clients on MFIP under the age of 18 years. This program has helped achieve successful results in terms of helping teen moms access high-quality child care services, understand child development, access primary care for themselves and their infants, and enroll in a pathways program with some community colleges to gain a skill, as well as finishing their education. While this program has provided encouraging results, these programs are not available universally across the state. Knowing that 51% of the teen births occur in Greater Minnesota, we need to expand funding for targeted home visiting to make it accessible to more Minnesota families and babies in need. Additionally, the Minnesota Coalition for Targeted Home Visiting supports House File 1564. The coalition represents local public health providers, as well as a variety of nonprofit organizations and other agencies such as Early Head Start, who provide home visiting services to families across the state. While House File 1564 expands family home visiting services to pregnant and parenting teens, the coalition recommends expanding support to other target populations. These may include moms who are in jail or incarcerated, families experiencing homelessness with children under five, families struggling with mental health issues, families with children who have special health care needs, and families experiencing or exposed to violence. All of our families are exposed to chronic stress that has potential for long-term negative health impacts on the newborn child and the family as a whole. Home visiting services can help mitigate these negative health impacts and position families for success. We encourage your support of House File 1564 and your consideration to expand these important services to other families with high needs. Increased support to home visiting programs has the potential to affect Minnesota for generations to come. If we can help families learn to nurture their children in a way that supports strong parent-child relationships, optimal brain growth and development, and learning readiness, we can make great progress toward addressing the achievement gap that occurs very early on. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Adamson. And Representative Franzen, I think let's go ahead and put the A1 amendment on the bill. So Representative Franzen moves the A1 amendment. Representative Franzen to the amendment.
I don't have it in front of me.
All right. Let's see. Do we have the staff pass? No.
Okay. All right. So this program is designed to ramp up over 3 years for fiscal year 18 to fiscal year 20. And the amendment clarifies the base needed in fiscal year 20 and 21 to serve the intended 3,659 families per year once the program is fully phased in, Mr. Chair.
All right. Questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing no questions, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Let's go to, I think we have further testifiers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Becky Dale. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Minnesota Communities Caring for Children, which is also the Minnesota chapter of Prevent Child Abuse America. Prevent Child Abuse America is also the family, the home of Healthy Families America, which is one of the evidence-based home visiting programs that has been recognized in federal legislation as well as used here in Minnesota. So there's a real link, a real strong link between home visiting programs and preventing of child abuse and neglect. And at Minnesota Communities Care for Children, our work is to engage all Minnesota communities in helping to stop child abuse and neglect before it starts, and in understanding that the way to do that is by nurturing strong families from the start. And we know, I know many of you have done a lot of work on the impact and the importance of the early years, 0 to 3, and also on how important it is to involve both parents and children when starting to address these issues. Children grow up to be parents, and there's much evidence that the adversity that they experience in childhood has many lasting impacts for them as individuals, for potentially their future children, for society as a whole. So when we can both support the parent, and there's no probably no more important place or time to support a parent when it is a teen parent, to give those extra supports in place, we know that we can, as has been so eloquently already mentioned, interrupt cycles and set strong foundations that actually save money and lots of problems across time. We know, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, but adversity in early childhood is linked to all a host of health and social problems, to domestic violence, to heart disease, obesity, early onset diabetes, adult onset diabetes, worker problems. So it really impacts drug and alcohol abuse, many of the issues that we've heard even today in this room. That when you invest in providing those supports to parents, and particularly those parents who might be most vulnerable and need the supports the most, you're really having a broad impact on many of the issues that you as a legislature will face over the course of the years. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dale, for your testimony. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Shakira Atkins. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Shakira Atkins. I am a teen who has participated in family home visiting through Hennepin County's Teen Hope Program. I'm currently working at Alorica as a pharmacy tech, and I am starting my CNA classes March 20th at Hennepin Tech. I really support the governor's family home visiting proposal because I was an infant in Hennepin County. I was provided with a public health nurse, Wilkie Compton. I would not have qualified for either Nurse Family Partnership or Health Families America because of Hennepin County's Infant Teen Hope Program. I was able to have a nurse. Over the last 3 years, Wilkie and I have been able to do a lot together. I met her while I was a student at North Education Center, and I have an infant son over the years. She has connected me with, helped me grow for concerns about my child's development, helped me to get into therapy and different shelters when I needed to. She helped me with resources that I needed for my children, like a pack and play, development assessments, books, and items to cover my daily needs. She also connected me to a GED program that NVNA developed, the Pathways program, where I later graduated. This opened doors for me to meet new people and start new beginnings. I met my mentor, Anita Kellogg, through this program, too. I work with Pathways currently for CNA enrollment. Working with Wilkie helped me have the confidence I need to keep going every day and to remember that my kids are my motivation. If I want them to achieve something in life, I need to be an example for them. She also helped me learn how to budget and learn how to be more responsible with my decisions. She helped me get resources that will help me and my kids be ready for kindergarten. I would tell other teens in my situation to be open to their home visiting nurses. Be who you are and don't be afraid to let your nurse into your life. At first, you might not like working with them because you don't really know them and you feel they are nosy, but really they just want to help you and prepare you for the future. There are so many benefits working with a home visiting nurse. Don't just meet them because you have to. Do it because you want to. At first, I felt like I had to, but quickly I started reaching out to Wilkie because I had questions and I knew she would have answers or ideas. I knew what I wanted to do in life and who I wanted to be, and I knew she had resources that could help me get there. Don't be afraid to reach out because they are there to help you, support you, and make you a better you. Please support the governor's family home visiting proposal so more young parents can have better future and learn to be independent.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Atkins. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify? Please make your way down. Take your time. Introduce yourself for the committee.
My name is Alicia Stewart Mackey, and I am a social worker with the Ramsey County Public Health M15 Parent Program. And I am here today in support of this young lady, one of our clients, who wanted to share a little bit of her story.
My name is Anna Delgado.
Ms. Mackey, yeah, if you could just bring the microphone a little closer to you and just speak right into it and tell us who you are and give us your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Anna, and this is my testimony. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Anna Delgado. I'm a junior in high school and live in Little Canada. I am a teen who has participated in the family home visiting program with Ramsey County Public Health for almost 2 years now. When my public health nurse first called me, I was about 3 months pregnant. She helped me get ready to have my baby by teaching me what to expect and giving me lots of education on different topics. We talked a lot about how to be healthy, especially while pregnant, breastfeeding, postpartum depression, what it is and what to do about it, a lot of labor and delivery education, and how to take care of my baby. When I was in my third trimester, she brought a baby doll out for hands-on practice, and we did things like changing diapers, learning how to carry a baby, hold the baby, and CPR and safety things. This information really helped me become the mom I am today. My nurse helped me to be as prepared as I could for the birth of my son, knowing how to take care of him, and this gave me more confidence being a young mom. Once my son was born, my nurse was very supportive. We met once every week for quite a while. Every week, my nurse would measure and weigh RJ, so I knew he was growing and developing good and gaining weight like he needs to be healthy. Another really helpful thing my nurse and I talked about every visit was child development, the ages and stages that my son was going through. This information really helped me was helpful to me because then I knew what RJ is going through and how he is growing and changing physically and mentally. My nurse taught me about child development by showing me video, bringing me pamphlets and papers with information on it for me to read and keep, and lots of talking and playing with RJ for hands-on teaching. During our visits, my nurse talked with me about why RJ might cry and how to know what he needed. She taught me that RJ uses different cries when he needs something. This information made me feel relieved and gave me choices and how to handle my crying baby. She really taught me how to help my baby and understand his crying. My nurse also taught and showed me the importance of reading, playing, and singing to RJ. Doing this while I was pregnant helped my son and I bond even before he was born because he knew my voice. Reading and singing also helped him develop his language skills, and he loves to play and sing with me. Once I got on MFA and started talking with Alicia, she helped me with everything. She helped us get approved and open on my MFA case, which was a lot of work and ton of paperwork. Since then, she constantly helped me do all my MFIT paperwork each month so that my benefits will stay open. Other things Alicia has helped me with, including learning resources around my community, getting me to school and helping me find good daycare and getting RJ started in daycare, because without daycare, I wouldn't be able to go to school every day. Alicia was also able to sign me up for driver's ed through FF Founding, so today I can drive. Alicia gives me lots of emotional support and relationship support. She works with both me and the father of my baby, which is helpful because she understands and knows both of our perspectives. In the beginning, I struggled with school attendance. Since working with Alicia, my attendance has greatly improved. This last quarter, I earned the most improved attendance and was on the A honor roll. Alicia and I talk about the importance of education and the role modeling that I am doing for my son, RJ. I want my son to know that education is important. Also, my infant cash is tied directly with my school attendance, which I know Alicia is checking each month. So if I don't have good school attendance, Alicia will know, and I will not get all my infant benefits. I need these benefits to take care of my son. When I do good at school, Alicia will reward me with gift cards and tell me how proud of me she is. Sharon and Alicia have both motivated me to become a better person and a mom. I will graduate next year and plan to go to college to become someone successful and prove everybody wrong who said my life was over because I was a teen parent. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair. And maybe this is for Representative Franson. I'm familiar with some of these programs in my community, and I'm wondering, is this an extension of existing county home visiting programs, or is this new? One of the other testifiers talked about broad-based programs, and your bill calls out the program just for teen parents. So can you clarify?
Thank you, Representative Franson, and welcome back, Ms. Adamson.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, representatives, can't remember which one asked it. Oh,
sorry. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Representative Haley. The way that home visiting is organized in Minnesota, we do have county nurses, and there are many county health boards who have their own public health nurses, but this is a much broader type of nursing. Typically, when you're looking at the nurses who are out at the county health boards, at least has been, it's been more short-term nursing and looking at nursing in response to a medical need, perhaps, that an infant or a mother would have. While some community health boards have taken on long-term nursing, you know, up to 3 years with the specific training, it's also been something that's funded in partnership with nursing, trained professionals, and other folks. We find that the same, you know, families are all different, and the problems that we see are very different. So sometimes a public health nurse and someone from a county system might be the right match. Other times, folks that have mental health background or a child development background or have been worked in other types of systems have a better way of engaging with families. So we try to make it flexible and yet consistent so that we know that all families that are receiving evidence-based home visiting are receiving a high level of intervention.
Representative Haley.
I don't have another question, Chair.
Other questions? All right, seeing no other questions. Final thoughts, Representative Franzen?
Nope. Thanks for your time.
All right, with that, Representative Franzen renews her motion that House File 1564, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Franzen, and testifiers.
Thank you.
That's up. We're up tomorrow. This concludes our agenda for today. With that, we are